to Buzzworthy. My name is Shalicia Harris, your host. And in the studio today with me is Garza Amin, founder and CEO of Cavidax. And Garza just told me something she really believes in, which is tapping into your greatest capacity so that you can serve the world bigger and boldly. Welcome to the studio, Garza.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Shalicia, for having me.
Absolutely. It's such a pleasure. And the very first question I always ask, because I know that, you know, looking back often is 2020. 2020 is always hindsight, right? But when you look back at your own story, what do you think set you up to be an entrepreneur today?
I landed in Canada because my family was here, and I went through this whole process of what am I going to do with my life right now? I don't have a work permit. I'm just here as an immigrant, and I'm trying to figure out my life. So processing all the immigration stuff, then getting the documentation to finally be able to work, went through 1,000 job applications, everyone asking me, do you have Canadian experience? To the saying, no, I don't have Canadian experience, but I just graduated from the States with full scholarship, all these credentials and internships that I've had. And still it was like rock bottom low. I was telling my mom how hard it is. And as an immigrant parent, what I always hear from my parents that how much they have given up for us and for our success. And so she looked at me and she was like, I think you got this. I absolutely think you can do whatever you want to do in your life. You just have to keep going and keep tapping your highest potential. And so I told myself, no matter what, how hard it is, I am going to make a very good life here in Canada for myself, but also build something really good here. I had fintech opportunities that I worked with several fintech companies at that time. Probably in the span of like 3 years, I worked with like 5 to 7 different fintech companies and hopping in between different startups. I think it gave me a very holistic perspective of how digital banking was working, how the fintech space was working. But also I had this incredible opportunity to meet some very, very great entrepreneurs when I was working with these startups. And I would look at them and I would be inspired every day by their grit, by their resilience, by how they were tackling all these problems. And then at one point in time, I was like, 9 to 5 was not just working for me. I was like, I really want to do something that drives me, that fuels my passion, that gets me moving, but also that I am being challenged every day by it. And at one point in time, it's now I am having all this fintech experience in the digital banking space across the US, Canada, Asia. I know how to build softwares. I know software languages. My grandmother right now is very sick as well. We're trying to send her money. And we can't do that because of the bureaucratic systems that exist around us. She was a very important person in my life as a kid when I was growing up with her. Like her resilience, her grit, the way she showed up, but also her strength was always a reminder for me what a woman can do in a world that is just dominated in so many ways by so many narratives and stories in different structures. Why can't I do something that would change stuff for her, that would make things better in the fintech space? And so I lost my job in 2024, I think it was 2024, end of 2024. Moved back to my parents' basement and I was like, screw it, I'm going all in and I'm building something of myself. And I think it was just the universal force. It's like, what can go wrong? I'm just betting on myself and I'll see how things are going to work out and I'm just going to figure it out. And I think that's how Cavidax was born.
That's such a powerful story because, you know, oftentimes it is at those very low moments and every entrepreneur goes through that. It's almost like the breaking of you that says, you know, the only option is to put it back together. but put it back together in the most beautiful way. So there's this Japanese art in pottery where they take broken pottery and put it back together using gold. And at the end, it's just like this very beautiful thing that was put together from something broken where you might not think it could be used again. And it's really often at those broken points that things become so beautiful. And that art is actually called kintsugi. And I came across it, maybe it was early last year, and it was so beautiful. And I think I see every entrepreneur has a moment like that. It's this breaking point where everything changes for them. And it doesn't change overnight because it takes time to put the pieces back together. But everything you learn in that break-in becomes gold. It becomes so valuable to stitch the pieces together.
I think entrepreneurship is, it is such a blessing for anyone to happen to them, to be an entrepreneur. It's an honor. It's a privilege. It's a blessing. But it's very hard too. It is extremely hard. Sometimes it's the hardest thing you've done in your life. And so you have to believe so deeply about something that no matter what you face, you'll still keep going, that it will drive you, that it will keep you moving. And so I think those hard moments are actually a testament of how resilient you are, of how far you can go, of how you are not gonna give up no matter what. And I think building that muscle is just so powerful, and it helps you grow as an individual so much too. So I love that, because I think it's like you see something that is broken in the world or in your life or in someone's life, and you just have this deep sense of responsibility to fix it, to change it, to bring light. And I feel like that's what, when I see entrepreneurs, I feel like they're bringing light to the world that needs that light. I love the way you're bringing that Japanese proverb here. It's powerful to make something out of broken pieces. And it's so beautiful too, because it's crafted in a very, very beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the other things with entrepreneurs is a lot of the problems that we solve are very personal to us. And this has to do with your grandmother and getting her resources, which would take so much time. Like I do hire some people internationally, you know, from Nigeria to Mexico to other places, and to send them money, even sending money from Canada to the US takes up to 5 days. And that's the problem that Cavidax is really solving, because I mean, if we can't get money across the border here, I can't imagine how much harder it is to get it there and get it there in time. Tell us about, you know, you found that this was a problem, you found that, you know, that broken part of it. Tell us about what was so broken that you had to fix it, and what Cavidox really does today.
I saw that, so that was the time where I'm sending money to my grandmother, and we just are really in this process of figuring it out, and she's sick too, and so we can't do that cross-border payment on time, and like we have so much anxiety around it too. And so at that time, it doesn't feel like, oh my God, how am I gonna build a platform to solve it right now for her? It doesn't feel like that. But then later on down the road, I'm right now at that point in time reflecting, and I'm thinking, well, what if I build a platform that would help someone like her? How would that look like? But then at that point in time, I'm also thinking a lot, and I'm just talking to so many people. At one point in time, I started talking to other entrepreneurs, especially women entrepreneurs. I was asking them how they are sending money internationally. What are their pain points? How are they going global? How are they starting their operations in another country? Do they have the desire and the dream to have their businesses be in several countries and expand their scope. Unfortunately, that was also a time where tariffs were hitting too. Most of the people that I'm talking to at that point in time are telling me they can't go global. They can't have operations in several countries because they are now hit by tariffs. My female friends and other female founder friends are also telling me how hard it is for them to get funding, get venture funding, get funding in general from other spaces. All I see is now in my whole universe a broken financial system that is just not serving the way it has to serve everyone around me. My grandmother needs money. She's so sick and I can't send that to her. My friend is right now not being able to go and have her clothing business right now clothes be sold in the US because of the tariffs and how much she's now paying in this space. And then these women are right now saying, I can get loan, I can get funding, I'm starting my venture funding is not going. And so this is all the data points that are coming to me and I'm like, oh my god, and why is no one solving this? And I'm still figuring it out, and I'm like, why are we still operating with a system that is in the 90s? The SWIFT system and the entire other systems that are out there, yes, they have been serving us, but with all the tools that right now we have, how can we modernize this system? How can we bring it back to 2025, but maybe to 2050 or to 2100, like to those years? I did a lot of interviews with people. I went and I talked to people. It was just all of this data that was being thrown at me, it was very hard to be with. Why are we still operating in a bubble and in a system that no one is questioning, that is not serving anyone? Businesses are now losing so much money by just sending money. And these small businesses, they are the core of every economy. The system is not actually serving them. They're losing so much money on it. But also when they are going global, they don't even know which markets to tap, where to go. If an individual has a sick grandma like me and they want to send her money and her life is at stake, it still takes days and weeks. And so the system is not a human-centered system. It's not designed for humans at the core of it. And I really wanted to transform that. This is my time to fix it. Why not? Especially as a woman and as someone that came here to Canada, this country has given me so much. And as an immigrant, I have built an incredible life and I have been blessed to have all these opportunities. And now it's time to build something incredible here and give back that. And so, yeah, that was the time where we started Cavadox and we started building and we started talking to more and more people and more businesses, and they were all sharing the same frustrations. So yeah, and it's been such a wild ride, and I couldn't have dreamed for anything better.
What I love about everything you just said is you had so many questions and you gave us all the, you know, so many insights to the questions you were asking yourselves. And I think for anybody that's thinking about entrepreneurship, it's really that curiosity of why not this, why not that? You know, just go down the rabbit hole of the whys that eventually led you to a solution. And you were also coming across so many different types of problems within this one space, which is simply the movement of money from one country to another, whether it's personal, whether it's business, all those different mechanisms. What was it exactly that you decided to focus on with Cavadox in terms of the movement of money across borders?
So we did a lot of trial and experimentation. I love the way you're putting it out there with the curiosity-driven mindset as to like how we can do it better, how we can get it better, what the market right now needs, how can we make a bigger impact, what would very much resonate with people. And so I've had so many conversations with other founders, but with other businesses. We went after businesses to start with because we wanted to see how these businesses could actually grow, but also Canadian businesses could go and grow global and use the fintech systems here to help them to send money globally. So we started focusing on businesses that are sending money internationally across borders, and those who are right now mostly either FX is involved or it's very important for them to send money on time, hires in another jurisdiction, and the friction is so much and they are not having visibility around how much they're sending. What currency did the other person receive in, and how much are they losing? And so there was this friction as well that we identified, that there isn't much transparency. People don't know how much they are losing, how much is it impacting their bottom line. They don't know when will the money arrive. That also impacts their employees, let's say in another place when they hire someone, because now it impacts their morals that they can't get the money on time. So it impacts the productivity. That also impacts back the business. So having had to have had these conversations with people, especially when they're offshoring their business development or other parts, and we're living in a very global world where everyone is connected. So I was talking to these bins, they're like, yeah, my employee, she can't get her pay slips or salaries on time. And I know, and I told her that I've sent her that money, but she's still not able to do that and stuck somewhere and I don't know where it is. And now what? What is the impact for you? I am very frustrated, they were saying, as a business owner, that my employees are not getting paid on time. That impacts their productivity. That back impacts their loyalty. Yeah. That even impacts your retention. And that impacts my whole business. This is a huge problem and a pain point that these people are talking about. We have to go after that. There were also businesses that we talked to, and we were having these trials and back and forth, and they were testing the MVPs that we built. And they were saying, when every time there is another currency involved, when they are sending money, let's say from Canada to France, and there is another currency involved, money, the person who is receiving money, sometimes they both have to pay, because if there are wires, you have to pay too, which is even $20-$30 for wires, and there is effects that it gets involved depending on which corridors you use. It's probably 3-5%, sometimes maybe 0.2-2% on effects, but then there are hidden fees, and if you are doing different currencies, there might be slippage in between as well, so that might come into effect. And then when there are more and more delays, if you have so many contractors involved, and so it's a very complex system in and of itself, and when you add more and more complexity into the layers, some people were saying, wow, this is just way too much for me. I don't know how to deal with this. I'm a small business owner. I don't have to be dealing with all the currency stuff right now in sending money. It's just a small part of my business. I'm trying to grow my business. Mm-hmm. I want to make revenue, but I'm not able to because I'm losing money. And yeah. So that was the times like, okay, let's go after these businesses that are mostly doing hedging, currency arbitrage is involved, and we have so many different currencies as well involved there. Businesses are going across borders, they have complex workflows, but businesses are also paying their employees and are having offshore spaces. Mm-hmm. And then my heart was also with Canadian businesses as well, because we are right now building here and we're building it globally for everyone else. And so if we are facing problems like this at home, imagine. Yeah. And so why don't we just start building something that would actually really develop a different infrastructure and a different financial world that serves all these businesses? And so that's where right now we're very focused on.
That's amazing and very exciting. And I think I need to come and try out, you know, Capidox for sure, because like my team, it just happened that way. Some of my team is in Mexico. One of the newest members of our team is in Nigeria, and it's not that we necessarily went looking to find talent from overseas, they sort of found us and they were exceptional at what they did. And so we brought them into the team and they're here to stay with us, which is very exciting. But it's also, how do we ensure that we can pay them, like you said, on time? So since you've started Cavadox, like the reason and your purpose behind it is so clear. And what I even love about it even more is, yes, you were having this experience with your grandmother, but you really took this experience and leveraged it in a different area, which is the business-to-business space. And sometimes we don't exactly have to solve the exact problem we're having, but sometimes that problem gets bigger and the impact of that problem is bigger in other, you know, just adjacent areas that we might not have, we might not even have known of. One of the things that you've done incredibly well is not being afraid to talk about what you're interested in and asking questions and getting people to open up and state what their problems are. Because when you're building something from the very bottom, you can't build in isolation. You can't build in this little tunnel and then say, all right, we're going to create this magical thing and then everybody's going to love it after. You did the real ground customer work that I think a lot of founders don't really do a lot of that groundwork. And so often a big mark is missed because they just focus on the solution versus focusing on the problem that essentially leads you to a vast number of solutions. But how do you pick the right one for what you believe in? What do you think you want to do and how you bring that to life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you're starting a startup, you absolutely nailed it to saying it in a very grounded way that it can't be done in isolation. And one thing that we do at Cavadox, we're building in public. We share what we do, our milestones, where we are, how we do it, all of that in public with our customers, with the mentors.
You've been building in public, which is very exciting because you have the real ability to talk to your customers and sort of build with them, which is, I think, very much the right thing to do, especially when you're so invested in truly solving the problem that those customers are experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where you just go back and forth as to how they are responding to what you're building and build alongside them, build something for them that they really want to have. And I think that's one of the things that I have been learning through Cavadox and with what we are doing, especially as a software engineer. It's sometimes easy to get caught up in the product space with the features and with everything else. But the real work comes in when you put that in front of your customer and they say, yes, I love what you've built and I think it's solving my problem and I am going to start using it. And sometimes you have to do challenging sales too here, where you are doing back and forth with your customers, educating them and telling them what they are thinking about, where they are, and asking the right questions as well from your customers to get them to where they are. Because sometimes when businesses are getting caught up in all of the ways they do things, at times they're like, well, I am okay with how things are. I'll just be okay with it.
What's been the most surprising thing you've learned so far in building and becoming an entrepreneur?
I think becoming an entrepreneur really pushes you to becoming a better human. You become a more kinder version of yourself. You hear a lot of no's and you have empathy for other people, but you also have a lot of empathy and compassion for yourself and for what you're building. And you let go of that. You let go of the skeptics, of the negatives, of the no's, and you build a very strong muscle to be that person to keep going despite all the negativities and all the no's and whatever that you hear. And I think you also have a very good understanding of where you are headed, of what the vision is, of what you are building. And I think for me, that vision of what I am building today and how it could be in the next 10 years or 20 years, and how massive it could be, and how great it could be, and how many lives it could touch, and how much it could create, and in the scale of this impact. And I think that's what drives me so much. That's like, no matter how many times you like get hit hard, it's like, okay, that's okay. What's next? And I think for me, I really bounce back super like fast. Every time I get down, I bounce back fast. If it is not within a few hours, it's like within a day, I just move on and then keep on thinking about, okay, what's next? How can we crush it big time?
You know what? Two things. You being able to bounce back fast, like you said, is a real muscle that people build as entrepreneur. And that's what resilience really looks like. You know, people talk about bouncing back, but being able to bounce back within hours and a day is really great in terms of you acknowledging that you needed that downtime to then come back. What do you do in that downtime when something has hit you hard? Like, has something hit you hard recently where you're just like, oh, I really had to take a moment out, process that, deal with that, and move back?
That's our life every week. There are things that happen and there are multiple things that are on fire at the same time. And so as a founder and as the CEO of my company, I ensure first that my people, my team is in the best possible mental state. They're extremely grounded. They understand that where we're headed. They also understand the challenges, but they understand that we as a team are very strong together, that we can move forward. So every time when I get hit hard, I look at my team and I look at the people that are out there working with me, and I'm like, this team is going to be able to make something great happen. I also look back at a time in a dark time where it's like, what if this was never to exist? What if Kavadox didn't exist in the world? How horrible the world would be. How dark it would be in 10 years or in 20 years. And I would be devastated not to have had that impact, given how much leverage and autonomy I have to be able to make that impact and to bring that to life. And so I think for me, those moments of like, okay, let's keep going. And there are also people around me, my friends in my closer circle, that I just keep like venting to them. And I'm like, oh, this is so screwed. Why did it happen? And yeah, there was a moment where we were trying to work on some of the build-ups in what we had in like the product, and we had an external party that we were working with, and everything was going great, and then last minute they just backed off, and we also needed to move forward. And so it was important for us when we couldn't move backwards, and that also impacted the people that were with me, especially the people who were alongside building, and they worked so hard on it. And right now they're like, oh my god, I have to probably redo all of this because this X person got out. For them, I was like, you don't have to worry, I'm gonna take care of it in the next 2 to 3 days for you. I will handle this and everything will be great. And so as founder, you are like, okay, everything that happens, it's on my shoulders, taking a responsibility, I'm gonna take care of it, you don't worry about it. But then down, it's like, okay, now I have to actually take care of it. When I say I'm gonna take care of it, I have to take care of it. Just went on 10-15K and I was like, let's get it out of the system and just breathe. And I think by the end, it was like, this is great. And I think one thing that I want the audience to take from here is that sometimes we have to balance that mental state of strength with the body too. When you have both together, it really helps you be grounded and sort of keep bouncing back and forth in between all of this. And so for me, running and hardcore just training, gym, hitting the gym, or any other sort of physical activities are just super helpful. It's like you just take 3-4 hours away from it, and then once you come back, you have so much better ideas and you are way more grounded. And I think for me also, like, I think about as challenges in those hard moments as to, okay, what can we do? In like super action oriented, rather than like getting caught up in like storytelling, yeah, and like telling you, oh my God, this has happened, what am I gonna do? It's like stress, turning that stress into a power to fuel that action so that it can turn into an opportunity. I think that's kind of where my head always circles around, to work around it that way.
So much about this, I operate very much the same way. Very much the same way. Like, a couple of things. Like, I just have to vent, let it out. Once I vent and let it out, it's all good. It's processed. But also, like, the physical aspect of it. Like, just going out and doing something. Bike ride, walk, whatever it is. Change your physical environment. Because I learned this the hard way. Not necessarily the hard way, but where I learned that my mental capacity for stress is much higher than my physical capacity for stress. And like, I've struggled with, I've struggled with insulin resistance for quite a significant point in my life. And still having challenges sort of getting over that and managing it. And my naturopath had suggested we do a glucose monitor just to see what's really happening. One day I was wearing it. This was the first week of wearing it. I got an email that stressed me out just a little bit. But I didn't, mentally, it wasn't a stressful email for me. And I was sitting there at my desk responding to this email, and my phone started beeping, and I was just like, why is my phone beeping? This is not a beep I recognize. When I looked at it, it showed that literally my blood sugar was going through the roof. And I was just like, what's happening? Like, what is happening right now? I'm like, how do I bring this back down? I go for a walk. So I was just like, all right, let me not respond to this email. I'm gonna go for a walk. I went for a walk, and then the exact opposite thing happened. Once I started walking, it plummeted and it was going so low that it started beeping on me again. It was such a pivotal moment, because I believe it was 2016 or 2017, my naturopath said to me, because every time I go in and speak with her, she would ask me what my stress levels are like. I'm like, I'm good, no stress. Great. And she actually said to me, she's like, I just think your mental capacity for stress is significantly higher than your physical capacity for stress. And until you really manage your physical capacity for stress, then we can't get to some of the goals that you need. And it's, that is something I live with every single day, trying to understand, how do I, one, increase the amount of capacity my physical body has for stress than my mental body? Because some of the things that they don't actually stress me out at all, but physiologically my body responds to it. So you having your running and being able to run and get it out in that way, I think, is so great. But, you know, I just need a boxing ring maybe in my backyard and someone to spar with. And that'll be the solve for it. But today, that's not possible. But yeah, I think that is such an important distinction to make. I don't think I've ever had this conversation with anyone before where we talk about the physical capacity of your body versus the mental capacity of you and trying to balance between the two.
Yeah, I think as entrepreneurs, we are tackling some of the world's strongest and biggest challenges. We're also on a path where sometimes it could be very lonely. You could be very isolated. You also have very huge burdens on your shoulder to ensure that your employees are very well taken care of, your team is in the best possible way. Mm-hmm. You're making some of the hardest decisions and you take responsibility for it. But in all of that, you are a daughter that you show up for your parents, your granddaughter that your grandma needs to talk to, you're a sister, you're a partner, and all of that. And so I think there are moments like you have to balance all of that, and that means you just have to take very good care of yourself too, and show up for yourself, and have that grounded, disciplined approach towards being in your best, healthiest self, so that you can give it the best back to the world.
What's the biggest thing that you've learned so far?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I have learned so far as I think as a founder and as an entrepreneur, especially in the fintech space, that you have to be very ambitious in a world that is sometimes not built for women. And it was not built by women too. And so now it is our responsibility to build that for the next generation. And I know we've had incredible women who have done so much to get us to where we are. And so I think one of the biggest things that for me, I really think about when I think about entrepreneurship is how can I change the face of fintech and like digital banking and just in general money movement for everyone else, and what that would mean for me, how would I show up? And so showing up with integrity, with honesty, with loyalty, with full self, but also understanding that the challenges are just way too big. And I gotta be strong with it. It's like keep going no matter what. It's like you are just, your strength is way bigger than the world. And so nothing can crush you. And so I think that's what I tell myself every day. It's like, keep going. It's the beautiful world and you're gonna create a much more beautiful world and nothing can stop you.
Yeah. I love that a lot. And, you know, being another woman in the fintech world, I absolutely understand that, because we just have a different perspective on how everyone should be served and not having a whole system cater to a very few and the masses having to simply work within that system that does not cater to the masses at all. So your vision and mission in changing that, I'm fully aligned with that from my side of the fintech world, really focusing on financial services and how do we really serve people? How do we put the power in the hands of the people that use these systems every day to make it easier for them?
I love that. Yeah, I feel like every time I talk to another fintech founder, and especially fintech female founder, it's just such a powerhouse. Like, I really respect what you do. And super, super inspiring to see that.
Yeah, it's an exciting space for us because, you know, we make up less than 2% of the whole industry.
Yeah.
Like, not just like fintech, but like the whole like financial infrastructure, which is mind-blowing.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's still so shocking. And like the discrepancies and how much goes towards women is also, it's like we see so many women founders and they're not getting funding. And I'm like, if I have if I build this company, and if I build it and it's an incredible company, it's like, we will ensure that the future for women, especially when it comes to money, is very, very different than what it is right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. What is the one thing you want to leave behind in your entrepreneurial journey?
I would really like the legacy to be left in the next 50 to 100, 150 years long, when I'm no longer here, to build innovations that would actually transform life in ways that we haven't seen before, that we could uplift humanity to the next level, killing these issues. But not only that, what else could we build? And so what we are building right now with Kavadag, starting from this cross-border payment platform to sending money internationally, to then having some other great things coming along for us within the quantum space too. And so there is just a whole world that is waiting for us to unpack and explore, and to see what we have right now. How could we build a better system, a better infrastructure, not only just for small businesses, not only just in digital banking, but in general in the innovation space? We don't have a scarcity of resources. Like, there is an abundance of money and there is an abundance of resources, and you can build everything that you want, and you don't have to be limited by lack of resources. And if you're a woman founder, you have absolutely have every space to build without having to say, I don't have venture capital, and not have anything to stop you. And if you're a business, you can trade and go anywhere in the world. And if you are an individual, you can also do anything in the world. And so I think for me, just with this company, but also longer vision, is there's just so much that we still need as a world to build and to get us to that, those next steps. And I would do everything in my capacity to contribute to that.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's becoming more of a theme. And I think that's very much like leaving a legacy behind. More and more of our guests are actually saying that. And I think people often think of legacy, because I work with a lot of wealth managers and RIAs in the US, and it's usually about leaving wealth behind, leaving money behind. But I listened to The Diary of a CEO, and Stephen Bartlett was saying this. I don't exactly remember where, but it could have been on his Instagram. And he was talking about how within three generations, no one will remember our names, not even like our great-grandchildren in any capacity. And so the only thing, in a lot of ways, entrepreneurs can leave behind is the legacy of the business and the impact that they leave on the world. And the last question is, what is one thing you're taking into the future with you?
Me, what I am carrying into the future is, you have these incredibly amazing people who are always there supporting you, being there for you. And sometimes it's easy to forget when we're in the go, 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 go mode in building and crushing it and doing so many great things. But like at the end, it comes back and translates to what it means for human beings. And how do I show up in every conversation that I'm having with my parents, with my siblings, with my partner, with whoever I am having conversations with? Like, what does that mean? And so I really want to not lose that human touch, no matter how big or small we create systems and infrastructure. And I think for me, that also means creating and building Kavadag that actually serves businesses, and these businesses are run by humans, and these humans also want these businesses to succeed. So everything we do is how we can advance humanity to that next level and help everyone around them. I think for me also, like, we want to be the go-to place when it comes to moving money in digital banking. And we want to start it from Canada, but also put Canada at the forefront of digital innovation in the world. But at the end of the day, what we are building is, okay, how we can change this whole system and infrastructure around us that would now, banks were not probably like 100 years back then. And right now, the next 100 years is going to be defined by people like us. So what are we going to build for those next 100 years that when our next generations come in, they can be all these entrepreneurs? And I think being an entrepreneur at this point in time is definitely a blessing. It's just such an honor. Like, I'm so blessed to have this opportunity to sit here, but also to build for people, for real people, put our solutions there and touch these lives. And so I don't ever want to take that for granted and to show up like as a full human and with integrity and just help all of these people around me too. And I think that those are like some of the very big things for us and for us to be able to reach those goals, to those metrics, into like the impact, the skill that we need to be so strong too, because the battles will be like really hard. And I think I want to have that punching like thing that you were talking about before. Yes, like
sparring.
Yeah. Like being ready to get punched hard in the face and just no matter what, keep going. I think that's the kind of spirit that I do want to bring in. And like be working with, like, to start working with like the most amazing, but also the smartest people in the world. And I don't want this to be a Canadian success company, like Canadian success story. Like, I don't want to say it more like, okay, we want to go global and like, yes, do global things and all that stuff. But like, Cabrax is staying like in, like, it's a Canadian success story. And I want this to, like, every time I talk about it, I'm like, yeah, we are telling the world how to build innovative things in a way that it will be global too.
And that is a lot. And I think what I take out of all the things you were talking about is really, if I would summarize for you, is the one thing that you're taking into the future is a stronger sense of the human well-being, not just locally, but globally.
I love that. I think you sum it up very well.
Yeah, amazing. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for being on the show. Thanks for sharing, you know, your story. It was quite personal. Started with your grandmother, and now we're in this space where we're really helping businesses thrive in Canada and allowing them and impacting them to go globally through expanding their business globally or reaching employees beyond the borders.
Yeah, it's been such an absolute pleasure and honor to be here. Thank you so much for what you do. And I'm like equally inspired and so thrilled that you're doing this and creating this opportunity for other founders. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Amazing. We will see you next time.